Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to The Naked Professors, episode 4 of February, which has been all about eating disorders. And we've finished the conversation with Zoe, Hope and Sheru, which was beautiful and came to a really lovely conclusion last week. What really mattered to me is that I introduced a guy into this conversation. And you'll hear why. I give a bit of context as I sit in this space with Matthew Carter, who's a good friend of mine. And I've done a bit of an intro as I sat in space with him because I wanted him to hear it. So there's not too much to say to this episode other than I think it's so important that I had this conversation, that we brought alive a story from two men talking about, I don't know, our struggles, our eating disorders, our reliance on our appearance, however you want to bracket it. But it's just a true and honest conversation about how that showed up for us as two men. So without further ado, I'll introduce a conversation with Matt Carter. So welcome to the Naked Professors podcast. I want to give a bit of a context to this conversation that's about to unfold, because for the last 3 weeks I've sat with the brilliant Sheru, Hope and Zoe Hardman, and it was beautiful and impactful, and I hope it was helpful. It was for me anyhow, and just having that conversation. But I was conscious that was the first three women that we've had on this series, and we just had a conversation about eating disorders. And there are a couple of messages that I received that I really understand now. At the time, my ego was a little triggered, and I was like, it wasn't intentional for it to be perceived this way, but actually I can see how people saw it. And that was that the first women we had on the series was to talk about eating disorders, and that label automatically falls with women, which was not my intention. It's just that it's very hard to find men who talk about this stuff. It's quite hard to find men who talk about things in general. But as I sat and reflected on that space, a very good friend of mine came to light. And funnily enough, a couple of months ago, I sat with this gentleman to record a documentary that he was creating around eating disorders in men and kind of the unhidden stories that are around it. And he just obviously came direct to mind, and I was like, do you know what, I want to sit in this space. It's really important to me that I bring it alive, that I reflect the truth, that actually there are a lot of men who sit in this space, me being one. You know, I went on a very similar journey actually to this gentleman I'm about to speak with. So I want to bring that to light, and it just a beautiful opportunity presented in that way. You know, it came from my ego being triggered. I'm being accused of not sharing the truth of this, and that wasn't my intention, but it has given me the opportunity now to sit in this space. Anyway, I'm losing my words a bit, so I think what I want to do is welcome Mr. Matthew Carter to the stage first and foremost. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Ben. Thank you very much for having me.
No, not at all. Thank you. Thank you for sitting in this space with me. As I was kind of alluding to there, it's really important to me that I bring this conversation alive. And as we both know, we've had this conversation before. I really want to hear your story and to unfold and to allow us to dive into what was going on for both you and I, because there's some similarities. But first and foremost, as I always like to do, I'd love to have a heartfelt check-in and how you're actually feeling. There's a lot going on in the world right now. So Matt, how are you?
You asked me that last week, and I told you that I was having a bit of a flat week. I think we got to a point with the restrictions and not being able to go out and interact with our friends, and I felt completely deflated, and I let the emotions kind of just bubble up amongst the day, and I could feel it. And we discussed briefly a podcast that I think we both listened to about the importance of social interactions and how much that moment of going to the shop and saying thank you to the barista or the train conductor or your friend at the park, whoever that might be, those little moments that we have throughout the day, they essentially fill up your happiness tire. And when you don't have those moments of social interaction, the tire starts to deflate. But this week is being completely different. I mean, I'm quite fortunate and very grateful that I'm a type 1 diabetic, but I was able to get the COVID vaccine on Friday. I was in and out in no time. And then Saturday, Sunday, it really started to feel like spring is finally on the way. So my head has been in a completely different space because I struggle with the feeling of the unknown and not being able to plan anything, just like many other people at the moment. And there is a real sense at the moment that we're moving towards some form of normality. But it's just interesting how different your headspace can be just throughout a few days. But I think, you know, when I was feeling flat, I spoke to my partner about that. And it's the best thing that you can do. And I think the worst thing at the time is to go on talk about social media and the impact that it has on eating disorders and a very unspoken topic. But I think I had a bit of a social media binge as well and just felt rotten. But Ben, I'm not going to lie, I'm full of beans this morning. I think it's being back on with you that twice in a week.
It
fills me full of joy, endless, copious amounts of joy.
Do you know, you're the first person who's ever said that.
I hope I'm not the last.
No, listen, I'm taking full credit for it, you know. I want a letter of appreciation, and you know, this is what it can do to people's days, everyone.
Yeah.
No, I'm grateful, and I felt the same thing actually on Saturday, being out and about. It was really warm, the sun was out, and it was like, oh, there's real, you know, I don't know if it was the weather, but it kind of almost, I was like, there is optimism, isn't there? We're coming out of this. It's things are changing, and I can see us all being out and about like this in the sunshine, and summer's coming, and I don't know.
It really, just like you bounce so much off people's body language and how people gesticulate and things around you, and I don't know, that people seem to be walking a bit more chest up kind of thing over the weekend, which was really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Although I've got to say, Monday morning's come and slapped me around the face and said, oh, you've got a lot to do, so forget about that good mood.
Yeah.
You've got stuff to do, Ben.
Stop enjoying life. Come on, get on.
Yeah, exactly. My God, I'm feeling like this is a long week in store. But it's good, though. I'm feeling that underlying excitement of what's around the corner now, hopefully, and we'll see what Boris has got to say with this.
Absolutely. And do you know, even after coming after the podcast with you on Friday, it was just there was a little kind of just spring in the step, just because I miss that social connection so much. And I know that for anybody out there who perhaps is missing that at the moment, just the importance of a phone call or a Zoom chat. Not doesn't necessarily have to be with you, Ben, by all means, but
yeah, no, I haven't spoken about this on podcast at all, but I have created a platform called Heartspace, which is all about that. It's allowing people to be seen, heard and valued, you know, and it is online, of course, but that's where we're restricted to. But it's really geared around that. It's allowing people to experience connection, because never before have we experienced this kind of stuff. And we're human beings who need to connect, who need to be around others to, you know, like I'm exactly the same as you when we had that conversation. You know, it feels like, I don't know, you've just been felt, you know, you've just connected with someone, and it's a beautiful internal feeling. Nothing's changed in your external world, but something you just feel a little, I'm not speak for you, but I feel a little bit more alive after I've had those conversations. And it's like, yeah, I'm me, and I'm like, I feel heard and I feel accepted, and it's nice, you know.
Well, absolutely, and it's been listened to, isn't it? I know we wrapped up the podcast, and I said I listened to that Oprah Winfrey when she was being interviewed recently about her show, and she said it doesn't matter, you know, who I was interviewing, be it Beyonce or George Bush or Barack Obama. At the end of every single conversation, everybody leant into her and said, you know, was that okay? And she interpreted that as over the years as, you know, am I being listened to? Are you listening to me? And just to have somebody to listen to you is so important.
It really, really is. Yeah. Well, I'm grateful to be back here and sitting in the space. And, you know, this is the theme of today is about really letting ourselves be seen and heard, because we're talking about vulnerable stuff. And, you know, when we get into that complexities of things that perhaps aren't in theory our proudest moments, the things that we've perhaps buried a little bit because, I don't know, they're not stereotypically rewarded in society, that you don't tend to get, you don't tend to get pats on the back for the things that we're about to talk about. It's more kind of, no, hide them away. Let's not go into this stuff, because I don't know, it doesn't feel like something to be proud of. But that allows us to be seen at an even deeper level. You know, it's like even more of our truth has been shared, and that's even more powerful. And that, for me, one of the powers of vulnerability. So yeah, I'm excited to experience that with you.
Absolutely, mate. Yeah, looking forward to getting stuck into this.
Let's do it. The reason that we're here is because the theme for this month on this podcast has been eating disorders. And as I say, I sat with three women for 3 weeks and it was beautiful, and that conversation unraveled. But as we both know, eating disorders is not a female only challenge. This is very much something that goes on with men. It's just it's not discussed in the same ways, and perhaps it's perceived differently within society, that if men are having challenges in this area, it's just perceived differently to women. And there's a whole lot of stats and data that well, you'll know from your documentary, but around how like everything is framed to be set up around this being a female gender problem. And we want to have a conversation to say, hey, that's really not true. And actually, this is something that's not discussed anything like it should be. So I'm really grateful to get into it. And I'd love to just start with your story, if we can. Like, why are we having this conversation? Why you? What's your story around eating?
Yeah, of course. And first of all, I think I want to say as well that, you know, the way society is set up currently around eating disorders, I don't blame you in the slightest for not bringing initially a man on board into the conversation. After we recorded last week, it did give me a bit of time to think about and process a few more things over the weekend. And I was able to kind of dig into the archives a little bit more. It's funny, I think when you do, I love talking about unspoken topics just because they're awkward. And I think you're able to find so much from awkwardness and vulnerability. But we kind of know that less than 1% of all eating disorder, well, the research around it focuses on males. There's an omission of males from research on eating disorders, primarily because it's seen as a stigma that's attached with or a female illness. And for me, I got into the way I got into, I suppose, even saying it now, like having a form of disordered eating, even saying that, you know, I have an eating disorder is still uncomfortable now. The lifestyle that I led at the time, it was very much an uncomfortable and disordered way of eating and training, and how I'd occlude friends. And I just like many other guys, really, Ben, I was started playing rugby in school. I was 16, 17. All the other lads were much bigger than me. I got focused on the gym. I got obsessed with it. I wanted to be bigger, always wanted to be bigger. I was tracking my calories, tracking my macros. I just thought this was a perfectly normal thing about being a guy, right? During the Reagan era of the 80s, we see these films coming out, the Schwarzeneggers, the Stallones, and these films, they go all around the world, and we get this idea that men, this is how they should look. They should be huge, they should be jacked, they should be ripped. And I fell into that, and then I got into an obsession of wanting to be as lean as possible, and it really took over a big part of my life for a couple of years. And I like to think that there is a scale with, I think, where people sit. I was never on the top end of the scale, but it was something that had a huge impact on my relationships, on my friend groups, and how I'd spend my time. You know, you'd wake up in the morning, you'd step on the scales if the weight had shifted down. You'd be in a good mood for the day if the weight had shifted up. You'd be in a bad mood for the day. Then you'd continue that energy with you throughout the rest of the day, really. And then it got to a point where I think because of the connections and the people around me, I realized that I was overdoing it. I was training twice a day. I was tracking my calories meticulously. I was barely at points, you know, on like 1800 calories a day. But at the time, I never thought of it as an eating disorder. I just thought, and it's funny, the whole scope of the fitness industry, and we've both spent a big part of our lives in it, is that you can camouflage an eating disorder so well within it. Because if you look healthy on the outside, then by God, there can't be anything wrong with you in the inside. So I really got interested in this unspoken area, especially about male eating disorders. And I decided to do the documentary on this. We know that 1 in 10 men training in gyms across the UK suffer from muscle dysmorphia. And to be honest, Ben, I think the numbers is going to be much higher just because it's a taboo to talk about it. About 30% of those men will have a medically diagnosable eating disorder. And it's funny, do you know what? I was listening to, I know you've interviewed Johnny Wilkinson in the past, Ben, and I came across a clip of his last night, and it really made me sit up. Because basically, he was just talking about who was going to be the next 10 for the Lions. And I was like, Johnny Wilkinson talking about that. I'd be quite interested. And they got into the conversation of social media. And he was asked, what impact do you think it would have had on your career if you were to have social media? And he was saying, look, I came into it on the end of my career. I know I had to build a brand around myself. But I think for somebody like Johnny Wilkinson, it was already there. And it's such an important factor these days. But he was talking about how much of our potential in life is given away to what people think of us. And I think, Ben, we can both relate to that, right? I think sometimes you live in fear constantly of not doing something in your life because the fear of judgment. And he spoke about what people think of us is essentially, it's never in our control and never should it be. It means that you're forever being led by others. And I'm going to tie this back into the eating disorders in a moment. But he says that you're forever being led by others. And it's about having an inner grounding rather than an external. So it's you that's doing the leading, not the other way around. It's very easy. Like, say, Ben, you woke up this morning and you read something about, oh, Ben, your podcast isn't very good or something like that. If you read that before you came on, that type of energy that you carry, it can then perpetuate into this, and it bounces in to the other people that you have in your life. But I think what the issue is with social media and, I suppose, eating disorders, is that you give your power to people that you've never met. And for me, I came into mine when Instagram was just starting to become a thing, and I would wake up, I'd compare myself to these YouTubers, and I was forever doing it. And I was forever, I suppose, living my life on somebody else's terms. And I did that. And I think it's very relevant to how eating disorders can develop, because even before social media, it's you're constantly worried and fixated on what other people think about you. And I thought that point from Johnny Wilkinson, it was really interesting, because he was very much, you know, if you give your power over to people every single day, it's going to have a point, you know, there's going to be a point where perhaps you will snap or you will need to seek medical help for it. And I think that ties in nicely to, because that's definitely something that I did, Ben. It was definitely something that I struggled with. I always wanted external satisfaction from somebody else. I wanted the lads to say, oh, Matt, you look like you've put on a bit of chunk there, you put on a bit of timber over the summer period, you're looking good. And I always thought it would make me feel better. I always thought I'd be able to, in my early 20s, I suppose, my hedonistic years, I'd be able to be more attractive to women. That was a key component of it as well. And that's something that we both spoke about on the podcast. But then you do get leaner. You see the numbers dropping and dropping and dropping. And then it gets to a point where the numbers on the scales, they can't drop any further. And it's like, what happens then? So yeah, that was kind of my initial story with it. And then that was the drive for me to go out and begin the documentary. And we got to speak to some fantastic people and learn some incredible things, which I'm, you know, delighted to share with you on this.
And you're so right in everything you said. And actually, one of the reasons that I wanted to have this conversation this month, because obviously January, there's everyone setting new goals, but also with lockdown at the moment, people are spending more time on social media. There's more comparison. The stories that I'm hearing of, you know, teenage girls and boys, let's be honest now, we're having this conversation, but sitting there on their social medias more than ever, comparing their lives more than ever, and physically having to try and change their appearance for external validation more than ever, which, you know, I can totally, especially having listening to what you just said, completely understand, completely relate to. I guess what I'd love to say, because my story is similar to yours, you know, it was all about external validation. And I thought if I changed my physique, then I'd feel better. You know, I'd be more accepted. And in some ways that did work. In some ways it did. You know, there was more acceptance. There was more validation. As you all know, people do make nice comments about your physique, and girls do go, oh, look at that, kind of a little bit more. You know, there is all that, but it's not really changing the relationship you have internally with yourself. And I think that is a way deeper journey than just the external change. And I think this is where I'm getting to. I'd love to bring this to you, because there's nothing wrong with being healthy, right? There's nothing wrong with looking good, you know, keeping yourself in good shape and having aesthetic goals and wanting to be able to perform well, right? Where are we getting to in terms of, I mean, I don't know if I had an eating disorder or if I just was driven to be the best of who I can be. Like, do you have any kind of perspective on why, where you kind of, having brought the documentary live, what's an eating disorder and what isn't? What, you know? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I've got, no, absolutely. And I think it's a really interesting point because here's the thing. So with being diagnosed with an eating disorder, there's pros and cons to both. Okay, so for a lot of people, Ben, you can, for some, it can be a massive relief because you know what it is. You can get treatment and then hopefully make a full recovery. But then on the other side of it, it can be a massive burden. So it can be seen to oversimplify much of what human or our human behavior is. But I think most importantly, it can also be very, they can provide labels which are often over-stigmatizing. So that's, for me, I never went out to seek medical or professional help because of fear of those labelings. But for some people who do receive a diagnosis with an eating disorder, it can be life-changing because you can put a foot forward and you can make a road to a full recovery. But I think this is where it ties into our narrative of what it means to be a man, is that taking that first step to put your hand up and say, perhaps I do have a form of disordered eating here. And when I set out to do the documentary, I put a message out through social media and I asked, look, I'm looking for some guys to open up around the conversation. And 90% of the response was actually from women saying, I think this is something my partner has, which it kind of, it hits the nail on the head that the guys aren't comfortable enough to come forward with the conversation. And a driving force throughout the documentary as well, Ben, is that it's, eating disorders is something that's primarily seen as a feminine issue. You know, if you go to an eating disorder clinic, a lot of the branding, it can be very feminine. A lot of the websites that you look at, a lot of the marketing materials, they all point towards women. And there's also the myth around it that most males with an eating disorder are gay. So that then ties back into how we view homosexuality still and the stigmas that are attached to that. So I never really started openly discussing my disordered eating until I started to do a bit more work on social media and put the documentary together, because it's just, it's knowing where to turn to have a conversation. Let's take you, for example, Ben. When you're going through your early 20s, you start lifting in the gym and then it becomes obsessive, it becomes compulsive. Do you have friends that you could have turned to discuss this issue, or would you have been a bit too embarrassed to do so?
No, no chance.
Yeah,
no exactly. Chance. Like, never a conversation to be had. It was like, but that's I think, you know, the perception is, it's like the more weights you're doing, the heavier you're doing, the more protein you're having. But for me, the bigger I got, and obviously some people, everyone's got different aesthetic goals, but for me, it was all like, it was only ever positive.
Yeah.
It was only, you could only see the positives in any of it. And it did generally bring more like validation externally. I guess like the thing for me with all of this is that's the whole point, is that it's like with society, is that we're playing a game that will never win. Because whilst it brought some validation, I remember feeling, I really like, this is a really strong memory. If I ever met someone who was like just completely not bothered by my physique or was clearly in better physical condition than me, there was an element of intimidation. You know, automatically my stigma, my natural response internally was, they're better than me. And I felt less than in that moment. And that's like, living that way is, it's just a, like, I love the phrase that says competition destroys connection. And I was living in a constant competition. And that for me is really unhealthy, really unhealthy. I don't know if you went, is it similar for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's one point I wanted to just to go over, and, you know, we discussed it as well when I sat down to you for the episode, is that I'm never saying exercise is a bad thing. You brought up the point that, you know, it can actually be a driving force to make us better. You know, for me, it's a coping mechanism. I get a little bit, I can't sit still. I'm quite fidgety. So I need to get out and about and run, be as active as I can. I don't do it for the physical or how I look so much, the benefits of that. But what I do it for is the psychological benefits. But I do remember, it's funny, we were talking about barbecues the other day for some reason, just because obviously spring's coming up, and I remember for some reason, an image came into my head about probably 8 years ago, 9 years ago, when I was kind of in the height of my obsession with tracking my foods and everything. I remember turning up to a barbecue, and it's a scorching hot summer's day, and I saw a bunch of my mates from uni who I hadn't seen in ages. And one of the guys there, he was always in pretty good nick, but like something had happened. He's taken it to another level. And I remember he was there. He was the only guy with his top off. And I just remembered that he looked like the statue of David, like he'd literally just been carved out of stone. And for the whole, it was so bizarre, Ben, because the whole day, all I could focus on was, God, I need to really knuckle down a bit here. Look how good he looks in comparison. And this is the first time I'd seen some of these lads in a couple of years. And instead of me enjoying the moment of being there with them, I was obsessed with how this guy looked, and it stayed with me for weeks. I mean, it stayed with me obviously for years, because for some reason the image flashed back in my head, and I was kind of like proud of myself as to where my journey's come now. But I think this is something especially that a lot of guys will relate to, Ben. Like if you're going to, I don't know, let's just say you're going to a beach club in Ibiza or something, and you've got those guys there who look a certain way. I'd say most guys will feel slightly intimidated when they see that. And I really did. And that's something that really stuck with me. And it wasn't, I could have seen that in two different lights, really. I could have said, wow, you know, he's been putting the work in, fair play to him. But I didn't. I took it immediately. I started to speak negatively about myself. And I was like, you've been really sloppy here. You've really let yourself go. When in truth, I really hadn't at all. And then I carried those thoughts with me. And it's amazing how much it will completely consume your life as well. Like it affects your relationships with your partners. It affects your relationship with your friends. It affects your work output. Like it's the most consuming thing. Yet it's completely unspoken for guys to discuss this. And I think, you know, just us sitting down and going through this and little moments like that, because I really hope if there's guys who do listen to this, they'll go, yeah, I've definitely been there. Have you been in that situation, Ben, with friends in the past?
Definitely. You know, and I'm just listening while you're talking and just thinking, yeah, the thing with that, because I think that I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of me, I guess, 15 years ago, who would have definitely been in that space, and what was wrong with that. And the first thing that comes to mind is that, you know, there's a real lack of presence when we get there and we're looking around going, oh, yeah, you know, God, look at that bloke, look at this, da, 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 da. You're not present actually in the moment. You're going into your thoughts of comparison and why you're not good enough. And it takes you away from being who you really are. I know it sounds quite basic, but the knock-on effects of having that conversation in your head are pretty big. You know, you really stop being who you are. Like, naturally, if you're having that conversation going, God, I'm not good enough in this moment. Look at that guy. He's way better than me. Now suddenly your ego is alive and kicking. And now suddenly that really might impact your behavior. You're like, I need to do this now. I'm going to have to get more drunk. I'm going to have to be more of a clown. I'm going to have to be louder like than him. I'm going to have to like really like, you know, put him down in some way because I need to elevate myself. You know, suddenly we lose actually the truth of who we are as a person. And we start becoming just this competition that, as you say, has all sorts of knock-on effects. And I know we live in a society that says competition is healthy and, you know, it could be a driver and everything else. And, you know, I get that. And, there's no doubt that that can really drive. And I know there's some stats around Olympic athletes and medal winners about where their motivation came from. It's so often to prove people wrong, you know, or to external motivation, external drivers. So it can lead you to great things. But I guess the whole purpose of where I'm coming from and really working on these days, continuing to work on, is it being less about how you look and appear and what everyone thinks of you and more about what you feel about yourself. And that's not what you feel about yourself because other people tell you. It's what you feel about yourself when you look at yourself in the mirror. and not judge yourself for how you appear physically, but how you feel about the way you're showing up in your life, the person you're being, like what you're giving to the world. I know it sounds a bit of a cliche and that this will drive probably maybe a step too far for some men. I don't want to preempt that, but you know, ultimately how much love is inside of you? How much love are you sharing? What relationships are you building? How deeply connected are you to others and yourself? All this kind of stuff, which none of it is particularly manly. You know, what is manly is to be the leader of the pack, to look great, to be really good at what you do, to be earning lots of money, to be getting loads of girls, to having loads of success. And we can do that all we want. And we look at male suicide rates, you know, and they're obviously incredibly high comparatively to women. For me, it's because we go around chasing the wrong things. You know, we are chasing all this external stuff and we're doing what we need to do to chase and to get these wins, to present this successful life that looks great. But internally, we're not there. We're not connected. We're not loving who we are. And with that, we do try and drive our behavior in other ways. We do try and, you know, get one over someone else. We do try and do something a bit shady to make that extra money so people do think we're more successful. We do get our fixes in gambling or from parties. We start losing ourselves a little bit. And then from there, the relationship we have in the mirror, we're not being the person that we know at truth we actually are underneath it all. And with that, it's a pretty horrible place to live if you don't like fundamentally the person you are. It's challenging to live. Or to live with yourself, you know, that's it sounds pretty grotesque, but that's where I get to, you know.
No, I mean, it's completely plausible. A big takeaway from that was, you know, will this particular aesthetic give me worth? And I thought, you know, after coming away from that barbecue all those years ago, I thought, okay, when I get to this shape, when I get to this size, I will get much more approval from others because it's their validation that's important. And you know, you did touch on when we were doing the research for the episode, you know, worst case scenarios that we do know that suicide rates in men is higher. We looked at a chap called Ollie Loyne who was 18 when he started taking steroids. He then suffered two heart attacks and a stroke when he was 19, and then a third heart attack killed him when he was 19 years old, all because of, you know, chasing that he wanted to be bigger and his body just couldn't keep up with it. But to go back to your very question at the start as well, Ben, I think we watched To Olivia over the weekend, which is basically a film about Roald Dahl and his story about losing his child. Sorry, I know I'm going a little bit off on a tangent here. But there was so much childlike behavior throughout the film. You see this in the parents. And that's why I think this week I've just got a little bit more of a kind of childlike spring in my step, because there's so much focus as we grow up, we get consumed on what it is to be an adult and how we should behave. But then it's that childlike behavior that's so fresh and it's so exciting. I think it's so easy to get wound up as being an adult and the burden of it. But we just, you know, this childlike play that's sometimes forgotten is so powerful, and just being able to get outside and go for those walks and act like a kid again is something. I think we probably do too much of that in our house anyway. The neighbors give us funny looks all the time, but I've been able to strip a few things back this week and just focus on many more of the important things.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's so important. And again, like relating this all in, you know, competition isn't play.
Exactly.
You know, that it's there can be an element, like Brené Brown talks about this a lot. She says when animals, like when they're playing, it's the one who's kind of leading almost softens and like lets the other one play with them. So if they, you know, if it's two dogs, the big one won't just pound the other one into the ground and take satisfaction from I'm bigger and stronger than you. It will like sort of, you know, surrender a bit and roll over and let and it would all be a bit game and playful. And that's when it comes to kind of what we were talking about in our past, it wasn't play, you know, it was like, I need to do this to feel better.
Yeah.
It comes from fear, not love. And you're so right. It's, you know, I hold my hands up here as a guy. It's something I'm constantly working on. is releasing that play, releasing that inner child, releasing that, like, let myself be silly. It's something I didn't associate with growing up in my 20s. Of course I did, but I had to get drunk generally to allow myself to be that way. That was how I could find my liberation. But day to day, it was like, no, this is serious. I need to get success. Then everything will be great, you know? And I was fixated on that. And my body image was a big part of that, you know? So I'm with you.
Absolutely. And I think I was very similar throughout my 20s. I think that there was a huge part of me that would play, but it would only come out when I was after 10 pints. Like I was only, oh, now I can play. Now I can act foolish. And so sometimes it would go too far and I'd do stupid things that you'd regret the next day, as we've all done. But it got to it's where competition is so rife. I felt I could only let that childlike behavior come through after I'd consumed 10 pints in the pub when in fact, you know, I didn't truly need that.
Yeah. And it probably wouldn't be quite so bad if 10 pints were made me feel good the next day and I could get up and get on my day and feel proud of myself, you know. But self-loathing that comes after 10 pints the next day, you're like, oh, God.
And then instantly you
say, I need to have another 10 pints now because I feel so bad.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm totally with you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'd love to ask, like, what was the point of change for you where you kind of thought, do you know what, like, this isn't really that great for me, and I think life could be better if I made a change. How did that unravel for you?
Yeah, I mean, I got so obsessed with it to a point that I did one like bodybuilding show, and I remember putting in all the work for it. And it's a similar kind of, I think a lot of people do that in the fitness industry. I thought the only way when I was in it was to get validation, was to get as lean as possible, so that I'd get kind of validation from other people in the fitness industry, other people with more Instagram followers than me. So I thought, do you know what would be a good idea to do this? What I'll do is I'll put some tiny pants on, I'll spray myself orange, and I'll stand on stage looking like a tangerine. And I went through this for like 12 weeks, and I was living with my brother at the time, and I remember distinctively, like, the last week my calories were next to nothing, and he came in and he ordered a huge pizza. And me and my brother were really tight, and I just snapped at him. I just snapped. I was like, you're just the worst type of human for ordering this food when you know I can't eat that. And it was pretty soon after that that I thought, oh, something's not right here. That's not normal to snap at somebody who I care so much about. And, you know, it took me a little bit of time to come off of my fitness pal. I got hooked to that. And, you know, as working as a coach before, it's great sometimes because it gives people awareness as to how much they're eating, but it goes the other way as well. You know, it's the dose that makes the poison of anything. I was consumed by it. I'd go into the shop, everything that I was getting, I would scan with my fitness pal, and I'd be so meticulous with the numbers, and, oh, I've gone on my calories a bit one day, I need to drop them down the next day. And all those little moments, they started to build up. And I think I just had a moment of revelation, really, that I couldn't continue with this. So I kind of just weaned myself off of my fitness pal. But it's something in our culture and as guys, it's something that really is truly ingrained in us. You know, we can see the action figures today, that each generation of action figure that comes out is more large, it's more full, it's much more muscular. And I think this has a huge impact on, you know, I'm going to be a father in July, and it's something that I think differently about now, is being able to think, oh wow, perhaps this had a huge impact on my life. I want to start this conversation now, so somebody I care about in the future doesn't have to go through it.
So let's say, I don't know if you guys, in fact, yeah, you do know, you're having a girl, aren't you?
We That's are, right. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say. Okay, so like one day, if you have a little boy, I guess, you know, you don't want him to go through. You would like him to have more freedom than what we're talking about from our experiences, right? Where he could, you know, look like however he wanted to look, and still be happy, and not need to go through this process, this competition, if you like, with everyone else as to how he appears, because I guess you know the pain, right? And you know the limiting circumstances of what that meant for you. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, as generations go on, but we do get more open with it, you know, it's very easy to attach the older generation of being very set in their ways. But it was very, very different for my dad's generation, just like it'll be very different for my daughters, maybe my son's one day's generation, then it'll be very different for their generation after that. But I think with the work that we are doing now, I'm confident in the fact that my son perhaps one day wouldn't have to seek external validation like I had to, because the conversation is there. But it's still really hard, Ben, because, you know, the driving force and the key message that came out of the episode was that we needed, a lot of the guys said, is that we need women to help us on this journey to begin a conversation. I think we're both quite open characters, but how do we get this conversation going with, you know, the 22 lads that are sitting in the football changing room? Like, how do you normalize that conversation? And it's the little things that we do now that I think that are going to prove that we can. But the reoccurring theme came out that, you know, this is something that we still need a lot of help with.
It is, and like as you say, the action figures and the films, you know, the heroes who are perceived and presented in certain ways, it doesn't help. But I think it is changing. Hope it is changing. So let's hope. You know, if we're sitting in the space and we're saying, okay, so we're not validated. And by the way, this could be a bit of a, I don't know if you're going to know the answer. So please just sit in the space with me if you don't, and let's just talk about it. But if we're not validated by our appearance, and we're not validated by how many girls we sleep with, or what job we've got, and how much money we're earning, and what house we own, and what car we drive. Like, what are we validated by? What are we trying to achieve? Because for me, that was everything in my 20s. You know, there wasn't anything else. In fact, I remember, I'm going to just really quickly tell a story. I remember meeting a girl, having a beautiful relationship with a girl in Ibiza, actually, kind of a holiday romance. And it, like, we spent so much time together. I remember thinking, geez, I'm going to have to get in a relationship with her. And I'm like almost not having a breakdown. It sounds very dramatic, but the anxiety that was coming into me, thinking, but what am I going to talk? I've been single for about, I don't know, 8 years or something. And I was thinking, but what am I going to talk to the lads about? Like, are my friends still going to be friends with me if I'm going out with this girl? Like, who am I if I've, like, I don't love my job. All I am is the fact that I go out, I'm in okay shape, and I get with girls, like, and I have stories around that. Who am I otherwise? Like, what am I? So I'd love to throw that at you, because that was all I knew. Obviously, I know things differently, but I'd love to just sit in that space and hear what you've got to say about that.
Yeah, but I think, like, personally now, but the biggest struggles that I have, I think as far as body image concerns or anything go, like, don't get me wrong, that's a part of my life that I've gone through. I think I've figured out how to combat it, but it's never left me. There are still days when I'll look, catch myself in the mirror and go, ooh. But I can get past that now. Now, if that would have happened, if we were going through COVID, say 8 years ago, with the gyms and everything closed now, and as silly as it may sound, my heart goes out to people who are really struggling with this at the moment. Because for me, if I wasn't able to step foot in a gym 8 years ago, I would have completely lost the plot. But now I've put a few kind of coping mechanisms in place. But I think as I get older as well, that the more questions I asked myself, it's kind of like what is kind of going to be my real purpose over the next few years? And in my early 20s, all my purpose was to go out, get drunk, find women, probably have relationships that meant nothing, because I wasn't ready to, you know, any time I got into relationships, I was like, oh no, you know, I need to go kind of back out with the guys and back into the gym. And there's this kind of perpetual cycle of that, because I thought it would give me, you know, worth and validation. But I've moved away from that now. And I do, there are days when I do still struggle of what kind of my worth is and what I'm here for, and over asking questions of the universe now. But like, there are days when I'll just sit and go, what is really kind of this life's purpose? But I do have, you know, little coping mechanisms. You know, I write down every day the kind of a little non-negotiable list of three things that I have to do. And one can just be to read in the morning. Other exercise will always be in there, even if it's a walk. And third will always be to reach out for somebody. And then I have an MIT task, so most important task to do throughout the day. And that gives me a little bit of structure and routine. And I think at the moment we need that now more so than ever. But I think, yeah, the underlying answer to that then is that I do have, I think it's the unknown. And there's part of me that's always like, oh God, you know, I should know what I'm doing by now. Like, I should know exactly what path I should be on. But then there's part of me that goes, you know, going back to the childlike qualities that we spoke about before, that doesn't really give a shit about that. And to be honest, mate, like, all of us are making it up as we go along, aren't we? Like, we don't really know what we're here for. We don't really know how long we're here for. It's kind of enjoying the experience. And that internal struggle that we do have that constantly goes back and forth, I think that struggle sometimes is a good thing, because, you know, you're able to learn a lot about your self-worth and your character through the toughest of times. And we need that. And I know you said as well, you know, what about these thoughts that you've got in your head? What if they're a driving force for you to be just for you to be better? And then it's finding kind of that equilibrium with it. And I struggled with that in my early 20s.
Yeah, I totally hear you.
I do have moments like that when you kind of just go, like, what is my real purpose with everything at the moment? Or you know, what will I be doing in 10 years time? I think we all do. We don't really talk about it, but that's probably the one thing that I wouldn't say I'm naturally a hugely anxious person, but I do at times, it will cause a little like flutter in my stomach and go, ooh, right, okay, where will I be in 10 years time? What will I be doing?
I haven't figured it out. But I do believe I've understood what I'm here for now. And I just don't talk about it that much, because I think it's language that men won't really get. And it's not stereotypically, you know, if someone said this to me 10 years ago, even, I would have been like, oh, do me a favor. Like, you're different to me. So I'm always conscious that I won't be relatable when I share this. And I believe this is a human experience. This isn't just an experience for me, but I don't want to project it onto everyone. But I've learned that the purpose is to love. And to be love, and to express love, to allow love, to love yourself, to share love with others, and to be in loving, meaningful relationships, and everything else unfolds from there. That is all like very, very internal. That is all within us. I know obviously that there's, you know, sharing love with someone else requires someone else, but we can start with love ourselves. It's something that we can experience, and we can top it up. Expressing it, sharing it with someone. But for me, it's about finding and unwrapping and uncovering and allowing love to flow. And I'm saying this as a guy now who's done a lot of work and unwrapped that. But as I say, 10 years ago, I was like, I couldn't tell, my mum was very special, couldn't even tell my mum I loved her. And love was just so foreign to me. I just thought, it's just hippies, peace and love. Like it's not for me. And it's kind of this, almost this sense of shame that now I'm like, oh my God, like I was so against this stuff. Like, just leave me alone. I just want to play rugby and go and get drunk. Like, that's my fun. And it's like, okay, my purpose now is to allow me to experience and let as much love be my driver. That, and I'm going to ask you about what are we if we're not girls and we're not our job and everything else. Like, for me, if I'm stripping that back, like, well, yeah, I'm just love. That's what's inside of me. And I really believe, like, our levels, if you put this down to mental health, I really believe that, like, how we feel generally comes down to how much love we're allowing ourselves to experience. It's a huge part of it. And that's love for ourselves and love for others. And, you know, I see a lot of pain out there, particularly from men who don't allow love. And I just, that's where I've got to. And I know that sounds a bit preachy and maybe a bit unrelatable to many, but I have to share that that's my truth. It is as unmanly as it may be and as foreign as it was for me so long ago. If I really loved myself, I wouldn't needed anyone else's validation. I wouldn't have needed to try and appear a certain way. I wouldn't have needed to be in competition with anyone because I'm already experiencing love. I already love myself. So that's kind of where I've got to with all this. And I do believe if I show up in that way, my purpose just naturally unravels. And I believe my purpose is written in what I'm doing and having conversations like this and sharing what I do on my blog. If I'm honest, that's kind of where I've got to.
It's so interesting to hear because it's one of the most natural human emotions or instincts, isn't it? And we know it brings so much, but yeah, it's like the Holy Grail, getting through to it, getting to it is so difficult. But yeah, we know when we are in that state, it brings so much fulfillment and it shows we don't need to do the extra hours at work or we don't need to, you know, buy the other car. You've got everything that you need. And I came out and I did a piece to camera to you after we spoke. And I said directly, I was like, you know, I know Ben has done a lot of work with love and finding love and giving love to people. And for a lot of guys, they would struggle with that. And I was completely honest. And I think I would struggle with that. But I think as maybe it's an age in it and it's a maturity thing as well. But I think, you know, one of the key takeaways that I just want to give to any guys listening to this, but most likely partners of guys that they think might be going through it, is that we had a guy on who is an exercise psychologist whilst doing the Unspoken episode. And he said the most important thing when you've got to begin this conversation, because it is an uncomfortable, it's an awkward conversation, is that you need to come to it with from a position of compassion and kindness. And I think a lot of the time when you come into a situation with being judgmental, it puts people's back up against the wall immediately. So if I was addressing my 21-year-old self, I would ease myself into the conversation. I'd want to find out a little bit more about the reasons why they're exercising, why they're doing this. And then from there, you can take the conversation to another level if you need to get further help from there.
Totally. Yeah, that's great, Matt. I'm with you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm just really grateful for your time and sharing your story and sitting in this space with you, if I'm honest, because it's
thank you so good. Much. Yeah, and that's, you know, we spoke about at the start, just I know it's not face-to-face human connection, but it's some form of human connection. Yeah, it's really nice to do it. Thanks, mate.
No, me too. Yeah, it's beautiful to sit in that space with you. Thank you. I'm really grateful. Thank you. Matt Carter, thank you very much for sharing this conversation with me.
Thank you for letting me open up about it, Ben. Much appreciated.
So there we go. Thank you so much for listening, because this one, I think we got a little bit deeper into the stories, the emotions, the thoughts, the templates of why we went on the journeys that we did. And I hope that helps and I hope it resonates. So thank you so much for listening. And Matt, thank you so much for sitting in the space and sharing with me. I'm really, really grateful for you doing that. There aren't many men who I could have that conversation with. So really grateful. Thank you. If you think this might resonate with anyone you know or a partner or anyone you think it's applicable to, we'd love to ask for any help and support that you're willing to provide by sharing it with them and to try and make a difference. So please rate, review and subscribe and follow us on the Naked Professors podcast on Instagram, where we'll be sharing some clips. And just, yeah, thank you for listening. I hope you found it helpful. And please understand that we're no experts, but we just wanted to sit in the space and allow the conversation to be had. So it's important that I did that, as you will have heard in the podcast. So thank you for listening. And next month we'll be back with a brand new theme and a roundtable conversation. So I hope you can join us then. Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.